breaking the cements. This was the foundation of this tree, and we moved it. We walked it along the road to the canal and back to some place in Amsterdam. As a kind of, as a proposal for a permanent monument, which later on was realized. So in that sense, it worked. We stated that this tree, this proposal, was the cultural expression of the migrant as a world citizen, the moving tree. It reflects the paradox of the migrant. It lacks roots, but it has branches and falling leaves. It is a mobile artifact, fragile and flexible, that may miraculously appear anywhere in the world. And quite similar, the radio station that was mentioned already by Nick, that we started in this blue house with a weekly meal and a round table, and we had people passing by and having discussions in many languages and making phone calls all over the place. Amtram Radio is as well a vehicle for the survivors of the fire to chat, to meet, because they were spread all over the planet, actually. But it also tries to show an alternative approach to the fact of migration. As an environment of free communication, it produces connections between migrants, activists, artists, researchers, etc. And that's what we still do. M2M tries to enable migrants to communicate better among each other and with society. M2M wants to learn and wants to teach. It discovers and explores ways to restore trust. First of all, in yourself, self-confidence. And it practices the idea that there is no need for borders between us. Let's go to video number two and see the last commemoration that was exactly 20 days ago. And I will find just a second. This is where Sacco and me are present, representing the survivors. And you see Sacco here, coming to the fore, talking to the people present from the surrounding villages. Sacco was then detained in the fire in 2005. Before the fire, he was in detention.
Sacco says, we are here to make a life again, together as one. These words are still very important for me, and also for the undocumented migrants, the illegalized migrants who are fighting for their normal life. They also say, wij zijn hier, we are here. We are here is to make a life again, finally, to make a normal life. We can make it happen, because nobody else does. From the politicians, we cannot expect that they give equal rights to people who are humans like you and me. Why are you here, Sacco?
Yeah, first I say thank you to all, everybody are here. I'm the only one to come here. Yeah, but the guys are here. But I never let them die. That's why I say we are here to make life again. Here, in this place. We make them life again. But they never come back. I tell you, thank you very much. Thank you forever. Even I'm dying, I want you to continue to do that. Thank you.
Jingle. Okay, we are now trying
My
to play you.
My name is Mohammed Umar Sheikh. I'm from Somalia. I'm here 1 year now. They say they don't take me back. Somalia problem, fight, everything.
Solidarité avec les
sans-papiers. Radio Migrant to Migrant.
Well, this was actually a recording from one of the commemorations where we communicated with the inmates. who were then able to shout to us from the recreation ground. And we had communication. We had even conversation. Sakwa, I have to ask you something that I never asked you before. Because at the first commemoration, you said these words. Even before the commemoration, you said these words. We are here. How did you come to use those words?
Thank you. We was there where the fire happened to commemorate the dead people. That's why I say we are here to make life again. We never bring them back, but we have to remember these young people who are dying in the fire. I don't imagine how they are dying in the fire. That's why I say we are here to make life again. But to bring them back is not possible. But we can, every year, to remember them, to make the memorial. That's why I say we are here to make life again.
Mustafa, what does that mean to you, to make a life again? And what do you need, if you look back? What did you need after the fires to make a life again?
Yeah, what I need to make a life again after the fire, that's justice, first place. And justice for the 11 brothers, the Ardai, in this this prison.
Justice.
For those who he dies, and take care for families, from the victims. And justice to provide for trauma care, because we take too much care from specialists right now, but to benefit to profit from this trauma care, justice have been done. And right now, we don't know who is responsible for this fire, because one suspect, Ahmed Issa, he's after he gets his freedom, and we know that the fire is happening because technical court slouting, and I know that it's difficult.
It's another technical detail. What caused the fire? I mentioned that the safety board never found out. And in the court cases against the one suspect who was actually the first victim of the fire, the guy who was in the cell that started to burn. In all the investigations in court, nobody knows for sure how the fire was started. But he was accused of starting the fire because he threw away his sheki before he fell asleep. Now, we know that he rolls his cigarettes with blue Rizla. In those days, there was a blue Rizla, which is different from the blue Rizla that you see today. And every smoker knows that if you roll a cigarette with a Rizla blue and you leave it for 20 seconds without puffing, it dies. So everybody who has common sense and some daily knowledge knew that he couldn't have started the fire in that way. But they needed a scapegoat. They needed, and I think the right term is torture. They put him in isolation. They interrogated him when he was still under coma or under heavy sedation. He was for more than a half year in isolation. And even after he was released, because he had done time, they didn't let him go. No, they deported him, after all, back to Libya. So that's what justice did. And like Mustafa knows better than I do, because he was the one that pushed until the end to bring the real responsible people to justice. If not the minister himself, then the directors of the Dienst Justitiële Inrichtingen, the prison officials. But they were not even accused. They didn't stand trial. That's one side of the justice. And the other side is what you mentioned, the care. And in your case, that's one of the questions that is half answered by the safety board, that it requires more organization, you know, to provide this kind of care. Was it hard to get some good treatment after the fire, Sako, for you also?
Yeah, my problem, I still suffering to now. 18 years now, I don't see my wife, I don't see my children. When I let them there, they were so young, like 10 years of minder than 10 years. Now they are big boy. The girls, they are big, like you guys. And I don't see them to now. Yeah. They don't give me good treatment. Am I still suffering to think about my family, my wife, my children, and I'm still here in Holland without any hope?
I'd like to kind of round up with two points. Speaking as a media activist, I personally feel the need to produce, to create a kind of monument that is more than the stones and the wooden pillars that are hard to find now, right now. In a way, this presentation is part of a continuous production of testification, of testifying, of making people feel, see, face, understand the reality that is happening even till today. Undocumented migrants are still in prison, and I know them personally. We have telephone contact. We will campaign to get them out as long as we can, because this is still going on. But if you're like an artist or a media producer, one of the projects that are still pending is to make a documentary. A series, actually, of 11 documentaries that represent the 11 young people who died. And in these 11 short documentaries that together might become a full-blown documentary, we asked the simple question, who was Maribel? Who was Taras? Who was Robert, Oksana, Naiva, George, Kemal, Ava, Lutfi? All those names. But more than names, we don't know. So we will ask you guys, but also the guards, what do you know about? We want to give these people a face to make them alive, in a sense. That is the monument that could happen. So a range of persons that are related with the Schiphol fire will appear on camera and answer one question, which will then evolve in a Socratic interview, a confrontation, or even silence. We will ask, what do you remember of those 11 who died that night in the Schiphol fire? And through these testimonies, we hope to give the dead a face to restore their dignity, while being well aware that these 11 are representative of a large global family of destitute, illegalized migrants ending up in administrative detention, ready for deportation. And then these faces may become mirrors. Mirrors. And we ask how, as makers, as public, as a citizen or as a survivor, how we can relate to people who were not treated as human beings, but rather as parcels to be returned to sender. And how do we relate with a system that produces all this denial? We call it democracy, don't we? To finish, I'd like to just mention that, in my view, part of the restorative justice is what illegalized migrants have done themselves in the last 6 years by organizing themselves, by doing demonstrations, by organizing tent camps, by occupying houses in Amsterdam, by going on the street, by taking part in theater, by having football teams, infiltrating society, being undocumented under the name of We Are Here. We are here as a messy network of volunteers and artists and activists and retired people like myself almost, but mainly illegalized young migrants, mainly from Africa, who are stuck because they have to go, but they cannot go, and they can go nowhere else. That's the other side of the picture. The picture that becomes visible, that's the power of representation that we are here presents. We are here. The words of...
I think we can it's maybe a good way to get a break by having a conversation. That's my hope. Thank you both. Thank you all for very powerful presentations, very harrowing presentations at times. But I think I also really appreciated, Joe, this sliver or this glimmer of hope and of inspiration that you had on this idea of building monuments, thinking of monuments as performances, as rituals, I think that there are a lot of kind of relations between these two instances, these two efforts. But there's also two very kind of distinct, this very clear distinctions. Whereas, in Joe, in your case, I was really shocked to see the videos of the burned detention facility that I guess was preserved almost for a proper democratic process of evidence. But so there was almost. I was personally very overwhelmed by the amount of visual material that you had. Whereas with Anna, there was none. And similarly, in terms of the polarization or the opposites of these situations, With regards to this question of responsibility and culpability, we know very clearly who was behind this torture prison, right? We know that this is part of a war that is, a formalized, discourse on, good and bad or at least different sides, whereas there is this kind of lingering question which you might be able to argue is can be used as a political distraction to be like, oh, who started it? That there's this kind of open question as to the origin of this fire. Whereas, you very rightly say, it's not so much about who started the fire; it's about why are these people in this situation in the first place. I maybe just want to lay the grounds. I'm hoping that there also might be some questions that kind of you two maybe have for each other. But I think, in that Sadnaya is a series of videos, it is a media platform. And Joe, you're saying that you are now working towards creating a documentary. I wonder if you could maybe both speak about the agency that these media artifacts have within this ongoing struggle and these contexts that you're working with them.
Would you like me to answer this first?
Yeah.
I think basically a documentary that you make 10 or 15 years after the events will not add so much to the agency about the event, but it might work as a reminder, as a confrontation, because the political structure and the institutions and the procedures are still there, of course. And on the other hand, I think that creating, together with the survivors and together with the agents of We Are Here Right Now, you are, with a documentary, adding another layer, another way of looking at the situation that enables more people to understand and to connect. And in that sense, it could be part of a broader strategy of what I call infiltration, submerging the Underground Railroad, if you like. Because I believe the big difference between Saidnaya and the Schiphol fire is that Holland is a democracy. Syria is not, at all. And the good thing about the Netherlands is that the system is not closed, although it likes to be, especially for migrants, but it is not. And society is more than regulation and state controls and institutions. So in Holland, in Amsterdam, we have ways to make life, even if you have no documents. And maybe this is connected with the guilt about the colonial past, or maybe with the good vibes of hiding Jews in the Holocaust times. I don't care, but that's the power we have to tap on. I'm not sure how this is in Syria, but I'm sure some of these connections are there as well.
I think the distinction is not necessarily about democracy, not democracy, but obviously Syria is in full-blown civil war, and the prisoners a weapon of war. It obviously doesn't compare to the political situation here. I think with regards to agency, one of the things that the project certainly allowed the survivors to do was to feel that they could do something with this experience, that they had simply not had any outlet for. Most of these survivors that we met were living in Gaziantep in a sort of semi-permanent exile, unable to go anywhere. They had only spoken to an amnesty researcher, perhaps, or to one another.
How did they live there in Gaziantep in Turkey, actually?
In what sense?
Was it a camp or was it a private house? Did they make
No, they're living in different situations, actually. Some of them, Diab, who you see doing sound modelling, is very politically active around Sinai, but around other political issues. I mean, they have vastly different... they come from very different backgrounds as well.
Would you say they are a community or a group?
No.
They come together?
No.
Okay.
No. Okay. Some of them met for the first time during this project on the interview days. What they did express was a sense of satisfaction with the project when it was finished, of seeing an attempt to reckon with what they had experienced, an attempt to understand it and to represent it for what that's worth. I don't think it... It's simply not at a stage where there's any prospect of a legal case for justice being brought around Sinai at the moment. In fact, that looks less and less likely as the situation in Syria goes on. So it is what it is. And I think with forensic architecture, there's quite often an effort to do something with what we have got, as opposed to just doing nothing. And maybe all we have is a satellite image and a chance to interview six people and a really small budget and a room in a basement in Istanbul. And from that, we try and do something.
Yeah, but I think it's a very important dimension of what, you know, you're saying about the relationship that you had with the survivors who testified and who gave their testimony and relived these experiences for you, and also in the way that these commemoration practices, so in the sense, the making of this video itself is a form of restoring justice to these people. It's giving legitimacy to their, you know, to their stories and to their life.
Yeah, I think with Sidnaya also in relation, it's a place that's denied and it's a place whose existence is denied and there are no images of it. So being able to, because the interview process, it wasn't passive, you know, they weren't just interviewees being asked questions, they were modelling, they were recreating the spaces themselves. And so it's an act, it enabled them to do something.
It's exposure and recognition at the same time. It's exposure of the regime that makes this happen, and it recognizes the suffering of the inmates.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be a start of a process of restorative justice, mm-hmm. I believe. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I maybe want to turn my body a bit. If there are any questions from the audience, we'd be more than happy to open this up.
We love critical questions.
What kind of responses have there been?
Well, the political response after the publication of the safety board that made clear that due to the mistakes made by the different institutions, these people could have died and it could have been prevented. That was reason for the two ministers involved to step down without taking the blame, really. I can show you the words that Minister of Justice Donner said when he resigned, and basically he said two things: that you cannot expect from a state to prevent all disasters that could happen, denying the fact that these were people in the power of the state, so they are responsible by natural law, I would say. And secondly, that if you demand this from a sovereign state, that they treat everybody well, it threatens to undermine the state of law and democracy itself. So that was his defense. That's no sorry, that's no excuse, that's at best a rhetoric, Calvinistic legal approach. He had to step down because somebody had to step down because they couldn't get away with it, but it was no excuse. And then, of course, there was a whole train of court procedures. The one I mentioned was about the accused Ahmed Issa, who was treated in three instances. The first time he was convicted to 1.5 years based on a sloppy trial. Then in the second case, the higher court in Amsterdam that took place in 2011. That's where we staged our own environment, actually, by parking a bus in front of the courthouse with a table outside. It was in the summertime, where friends and survivors could get together and tell their own story to the people of the press, and also having people inside reporting on what was happening inside, and also survivors. For instance, Gladys Tukaya, the one who wrote the letter to the Minister of Justice, she was also representing the survivors in this trial, explaining that in her eyes, Ahmed Issa was not guilty. It was the system that was guilty. And in between those two steps, I can say that part of the process was that we brought together Gladys and Ahmed Issa at the time that he was not in jail. So they met, just like Sacco and Gladys can come together. And if not get over the trauma, but see each other's real face, that's something. And then there was an indemnation of about 15,000 euros for people who had lost their lives in many senses, which was far from sufficient to do anything better than go to doctors and maybe get a house. We made theater. We did workshops. But basically, we sit together, we talk together, and sometimes we cry together, and sometimes we make music together. And sometimes we just do nothing at all. What do you say?
What do we do?
We make radio too.
Yeah, like what you say.
And we go around the world. We go to Senegal together, yeah.
Yeah, I have to go. It's time now to go see my family.
Yes.
Yeah. After the fire, it was not allowed I go outside to this country. And when they give me the Verbe Life Honing, to now it's impossible to get money to go back to my country to see my family. But you and company try to help me this year to invite my wife here. Maybe when she go back, I go back to see my children too. Yeah.
Yeah, we will make a nice movie and then we finally have what we need, right?
It's so difficult for me to stay so long without seeing my family. Everything I have in my life is still in Senegal. My wife, my children, my family, brother and sister. I have two brothers, they are dying behind me the last month. And I'm here. I don't have power to go. Yeah. Two times. My little brother and my brother. Yeah. they are dying behind me, and I'm still here. That's why when you see me, I'm Makar. I know I can be so big, you know, I think every time. And I sleep every day at 6 o'clock. Yeah, I wash in to 6 o'clock to start to sleeping. And I use medicine, strong medicine. When I use it, wow, it's so difficult for me. Yeah. But I'm here. I'm still alive. That is important.
I think, Mustafa, you want to say, but I would like to remind what we talked about. You asked a question that was also not answered by the safety board. The 298 people who were in the center during the fire, where have they gone?
Disappeared.
They made them disappear in many ways.
No, after the fire, they give us 26 days to go out.
Yeah.
And after the fire, we need hospital, but they bring us to the boat, to the prison in Rotterdam. And there also, fire happened there again. And the guys are trauma, they think they want to kill them. That's why many people, many of the guys, they run away. Some of Belgium, some they go in Paris.
Yeah, I want to say, the night when the fire happened was 293 people in the prison. Just we was close to the fire, 39 people, they can't talk very good Dutch, because the government sent to us trauma team, specialist, to the prison. They talk with us, and we can tell them what we have, what we have seen. In the fire, just we can tell our story, and the specialist, the psychologist, and psychiatrist, the make report, they bring him to Den Haag, to the parliament, and then they see these people, they have trauma, they have to move from the prison, because from the fire prison to under prison, that is not good for these people. They have to go to in safe place, get medical care. But other people, they have ook big trauma, but they can't talk Dutch. Ook, they can ook not very good talk English. But these people, they are disappeared. They need medical care. They have right to stay here. Ook the people, the 11 people, they are die. They are the brothers. They have a right to stay here, because nobody from us, 293 people, they was in the deportation prison. They have no criminal case. Just they come in to Europe to make life, to support his family. So some from us, they have children here in Europe, like me. I have a boy with a Dutch woman. He now is 18 years old. His name is Wesley. The day when the fire happened was his birthday, 27 October 2005. My son is born in 27 October 2000. My lawyer and me, I say, please, I want to stay here to make life with my son and see him grow up. But the system tell me no, because you come in here in Holland in 97, illegally without document, you have to move back to Morocco. And then your partner, your Dutch partner, come after you and make a new procedures. Then you get the visa. But my lawyer, he tell me, if you move from the prison and you go, you will never come back. And he opened for me in procedure. But I see the same. I was there. I don't have to be there, because I have a case. I have a son. I want to make life with my son. But I am happy that I survive. But the 11 brothers, they are died. They have same case as me. They have children. Yeah, family. Some of them have children here in Holland, and some of them their children in Georgia, Dominican Republic, Libya, so as Lotfi. And me, I am happy to tell I am survive, and I can tell the story of these people and for me. But what I want to see, we are here to make life again. After the fire, the government knows that they are guilty, but they can't tell the whole world we are guilty. We are suspect. We build unveiled container cell prison for these people. Deportation was the deportation place was not fire safe. In 2002 was okay, fire that happened. But in 2002, no victims. But because the government knows that they are guilty, the release the only one victim, Ahmed Issa, and they declare him not guilty, and they deport him to Libya. And also they deporting too much people with big trauma. They need medical care. They deporting them. Just we are 39 people. They have good luck to stay here to get paper. In 2006, they give us a humanitarian document because our doctors tell these people they are very, very, very traumatic. And one tablet, the first tablet is they have coming from you. Give these people paper. Then they feel that they are safe. 1 year after the fire, just we feel that we don't go away again to the prison to be deported. 1 year, 2006. And after they give us the house and 10,000 euro for each one, and that is nothing because I am very happy now, but my head and my ghost stay in the fire nights. Every night I wake up with building with images, fire, brothers screaming for help, but nobody let us to go to freedom because the Koninklijke Marechaussee, the police was there in the recreation place and they get the guns, her guns, and they tell us, don't move. If you move, to release the other prison, we're going to shoot your head. We tell them, please go you. You have power, go and release. They tell us, no, it's not our job. It's job of the Brandweer, fire people. But I am happy, and I know it's difficult to live with so images and trauma, but I try with my specialist and my friends and people every year to make ceremonies and talking about this, and that is a very good therapy ok, for me and ok, the voice of the 11 people that are die don't never be forget. Thank you.
There's a question there, if I can maybe just ask one quick question to Anna as this kind of goes over. In the time that you spent as these people are displaced, or?
We didn't really talk about it. I mean, I think it's very difficult to talk about it in this particular, especially at the time when we were making, when we were doing the interviews and the reconstructions, because it seemed so unlikely. It just seemed very difficult to imagine what an end might look like and who, what the consequences of that might be. What we did talk about was the prison. So we did ask all the detainees what they felt should happen to the prison in the future. And that was very interesting because a number of the survivors felt that it was very important that there was a place, where what had happened was not forgotten. And for some of the survivors, they thought that should be the prison, and that the prison should be converted into something akin to a museum. Whereas there were obviously other detainees who never wanted to see it again and thought it should be razed to the ground. For one of those detainees, he saw the project itself as being akin to that sort of museum, as it were. So the reconstruction had allowed them to deposit something of that experience there, and maybe they could move on. But in terms of justice, I think it's very difficult to talk about it. As I was mentioning to you earlier, Assad was interviewed on television after the project became public, and he was asked about Sidnaya specifically because of the project, the fact that he was asked at all, actually. Yeah.
There was a question back.
Shall I go? Yeah. Hi, I don't know if you can hear me from here or see me. Yeah, I had a question for Papa Sacco and Mustafa because, while you guys were speaking, I was seeing kind of how opposite your experience is from the experience that the people that Anna talked to was, in the sense that both are testimonies, but with Anna it was a conversation. And you said that they were very positive about the fact that you were paying attention to this conversation and doing something about it. But for Papa Sacco and Mustafa, you have been having this conversation, this positivity of being feeling like you're being heard, or feeling that your testimony is having an impact and is part of your healing process, of you're doing it because you're in this kind of seek of justice and you feel like this thing that you're doing is important, but in a personal level is no longer a healing process for you.
I think to focus the question, you want to hear from Sacco and Mustafa whether they still get some kind of consolation out of testifying, out of telling their story again and again, right? Or justice or whatever. Does it any good?
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. But
is it good for you to tell these stories again and again?
No, I don't like it, but sometimes also I have to make film or write book. I want to make them live forever. That's why I have to talk again, again, again. If I don't talk about that also, every time I think about that, yeah, it put out something out me. To talk about that. Before, I don't want to talk it. When you talk it, I cry. Of my head move. You know that. Every day, when someone talk about the fire, I'm shaking. And the way to talk about that is good for me. Like, I think it's medicine for me. Yeah. I don't want to every day to go somewhere to talk about your life. No. This is one part of my life, and it's forever. I talk, is inside me. I don't talk also, is inside me. I never forget that.
Yeah, for me, first is in free therapy, because if I go to my psychiatrist, he will, the assurance he will buy, but for me is in free therapy. And I learn too much from, because now is 18 years ago. My son is 18. Yeah. All these years going, I have experience with psychologists, and I am there therapy. It is in a method from United States. MDR therapy. I learned that I have to talk and to tell what is happening if I have the chance, and that is very good for me to treatment. That is also is in treatment. Before I read also. I have a book. I read what I see. If I wake up, and to tell the story again and again, and to people who listening, to people who understand, is also is in a treatment for me. And also to never forget. Those brothers, they are die, innocent people. And also those people they are deported with big trauma. I know that it's in a black blade in the Dutch government history, because it has never happened before. And the tragedy, the Schiphol fire ramp. I know that the Dutch government and justice, they have learned from those mistakes they make. And I hope that never happen again, because if you stay close in one cell, in one room, and you don't have we take the air from ventilation system. We don't have window, open window also. Just from ventilation system, we take the air. And it's very difficult, very difficult. And you see the dead close to you, you won't run away, but you can. If you buy one bird of one, and you put him in cage, you have to take care for the bird. You give him water, you give him food, you put him not in the heat, but we are human beings, and they put us in one prison. Is not fire, not safe, and he knows that this place is fire, not safe. But well, they put us there because they say these people, they are numbers, just like DHL exportation box. They will go, they will move, and when the fire happen and people die, and big tragedy, big mistake for all, for security, they working there, for us, for the families, for so. The story they have to tell, I feel myself, very very good, because I put out from myself what I tell.
Before we end, I think it may be good, if there are no questions, that you could give an answer. I can ask you a question. What can you do to help us abolish prison for illegalized migrants? There are many ways. Being here is part of it. But you can follow up and join in whatever way you like. You can find us through the book or through the website or through the stickers that lie there with the QR code of the website. Connect. And we need all people, because we are more than the ministers. But if we work together, we can make a difference. And there are many ways to do justice. There are many ways to make life. If we focus on one of the key crimes of the Dutch state, we can grow something nice out of that, like an artist does, making nice things for the people. Or like Mr. Barr says, the first director of MoMA, arts helps to make people see things. You can help there too. So that's my question to you. Maybe now you have an answer. Let's see. You have an answer, Nick?
I mean, be present. I mean, speaking from myself, to participate in the activities that that are taking place, because, you know, it's not even a question of whether these people are still here, but it's there is such a vast community of people that need the support, so to help.
Yeah, and visibility is of course an important aspect of the whole struggle. That's your business, right? And many artists and students can contribute in many ways.
Yeah.
Whatever you like.
I think also this giving space to people to share their stories and to listen, I think has shown itself tonight to be a very valuable process, to this idea of justice. That, you know, it is not just about, though it is about pursuing, you know, culpability on behalf, on behalf of the state, but it's also about a form of coming together and belonging. And so I think it's especially on those levels that we can act, that we can be with one another, and we can share our time and space.
I'd like to add to that that I believe that every culture in the world has forms of restorative justice, of healing the wounded, of coming together, overcoming differences, rather repairing and healing than punishing. And I think if you look around us, we can get inspiration from that. Like I get inspiration from Sakho, and maybe I give inspiration to Sakho. But if I listen to Sakho, I hear Africa, I hear Ubuntu, I hear Teranga. That's a different world, a different culture, different values, but there's so much we can learn from that. That's part of making life.
Yeah, Teranga, they take an hospitality. Yeah, they call my country, Senegal, land from the Teranga. Yeah. If you go to internet, land from the Teranga is a country from hospitality. And we have a good hospitality. We live with very fine people there, with Christian. And we don't have any problem. You married between us, and no problem.
Okay, with that, I'll maybe try and extend the act of hospitality to all of us, to maybe bring a close to the night, and to we can all be in a slightly more informal setting, and we can speak with each other, you know, off the stage and by the bar. But I would like to thank you all for sincerely for these very powerful presentations and for this conversation. And it's something that I hope we can continue and is something. These are all struggles that, you know, as was said, we.
Yeah. Hello. Samuel here. And I'm this year for now the thinker in North, the grote thing. Want er is vanavond een losse vlodders die hier afgeschoten wordt. Dus het zal flink wat impro en noise worden. Dus en het gaat als de schedule een beetje klopt, gaat het over een paar minuutjes beginnen. Dus wat kan ik verder zeggen? Ja, er zijn wat oude bekenden hier. Die ook onder andere namen spelen. Maar Collectivo Tak is er weer. Die was er zaterdag, vrijdag. Nou ja, laatst ook een keer. Het Italiaanse clubje. Ik zie Teun, ik zie Jacco, ik zie Lorna, Bouk. Gaan allemaal spelen. Dus veel plezier.